the tradition in the people of Israel, they spoke of God, of course, the transcendent God, and they spoke of God's word, and they spoke of God's spirit. When they use the word Yahweh of God, they are approaching God through, could you call it, the prism of the Exodus event. So they're always thinking of the book Moses, the burning bush. Yahweh adds to the word God the historical redemption that God brought about, that formed the people of Israel. In the Christian tradition, because obviously of the prayer of Jesus, we often speak of the transcendent God as Abba, Father, as Jesus did. When we speak of the Word, which we do sometimes, as Son, we're approaching God through the prism, if that's the right word, of Jesus and his experience. So when we speak of Father, Son, and Spirit, our focus is necessarily on Jesus and Jesus' prayer. This presentation takes us to the person of Jesus and the importance of Jesus, of course, for John of the Cross and for his teaching about prayer and about life. So our focus is on Jesus this morning. The gentleness of God so exposes our faults that we feel cast off by God, unworthy of anyone's love. We can go through this so long as we know we are not alone. We want someone to understand. We want someone to love us. We need Jesus. What is especially important to us is to see where Jesus is in John's experience of todo, the gift, and nada, the space for the gift. Jesus is ever present in John's prayer and life. He often began his letters with, "Jesus be in your soul." And he tells people when they feel the need of support to go to Christ, because that is where he, John, goes, to that spotless mirror of the eternal Father. Ian Matthew writes, "The power unleashed on John of the Cross in the living flame is identified as the vitality of the risen Christ. I live now not I, but Christ lives in me." The letting go, discussed in Ascent, has one motive and one model. And now he's quoting from John of the Cross. It's love for Jesus Christ, whose only food was doing the will of his Father. So that's why we let go, and the energy to enable it, the living flame of love to enable it, is the vitality of the risen Christ gracing us. The in Matthew continues, the one who enters the space of the purified soul in the ascent of Mount Carmel is named as the Son of God. And the desperate longing which fuels the pain of night is disclosed as a need for the Easter Jesus on the model of Mary Magdalene, anxious at the sepulchre. I'll repeat that. The one who enters the space of the purified soul in the ascent of Mount Carmel is named as the Son of God. And the desperate longing which fuels the pain of night is disclosed as a need for the Easter Jesus on the model of Mary Magdalene, anxious at the sepulchre. In Toledo, that's the 9 months of imprisonment, John felt the need to encounter Christ. Where, he said, he prayed, where have you hidden, beloved? John wrote a number of, they're called romances or ballads, and a lot of what this morning, that's what I'll be presenting. They're not his finest poetry, they're not lyrical poems, they're very simple that anyone could chant according to a tune they might know. So they're simple folk ballads. They don't look for anything profoundly beautiful in the poetry, but in the content you will find that. So the romances or ballads on the incarnation form the prologue of all John's writings. Ian Matthew says they are his statement on who Jesus is for him. Today, I know I've said this twice already, or maybe more, but I'll say it again if I may. Today we tend to approach the mystery of Jesus the way Jesus' first disciples did. It's biblical study has made that more possible. The theological habits that we learnt have been somehow refreshed by an upward movement of awareness of the humanity of Jesus. So theologians call this ascending Christology, starting with the beautiful Jesus and then working, being taken into the mystery of God from that starting point. Starting from his obvious humanity, we're drawn into Jesus' prayer communion with the God he called Abba, and so we're drawn into Jesus' divinity. We don't start with his divinity. And as soon as you say that, you realise, of course you can't. We start from his humanity. Just look at that icon again before I begin the ballads, if you would. There you have the beloved disciple, that's you, during this retreat. And you've got Jesus, and it's the supper. And there's the beloved disciple listening to what's going on in the heart of Jesus. And Jesus in that model is God's perfect human word. He's a symbol, a sacrament of the divine word of the self-giving but always transcendent God. And then you, enjoying communion in the love spirit that unites Jesus and God, the Son and the Father. Symbol of the divine love communion of the always transcendent God. Communion with Jesus is a symbol and sacrament of our communion with the one Jesus called Abba. Now I'll take you through these romances, just enjoy them or let them play on your consciousness. There's a number of them, let's begin. In the beginning, I'll Obviously, he's drawing on the prologue of John's Gospel. In the beginning was the Word, who lived in God, in whom he possessed eternal happiness. That same Word was God. This is all John's words. The Word is called Son, who was hidden from the Father. John actually writes from the beginning, but I've left a few verses out there and it's quite complex. So, just to let you know, it uses the word beginning, but in the context it's difficult. So I'm just calling it Father. The Word he called Son, who was born from the Father, who had always conceived him, and is always conceiving him, giving always of his substance, yet always possessing it. And thus the glory of the Son is that which he has in the Father. And the Father possesses all his glory in the Son. I hope you can see that what we're doing is he's talking about God and God's Word, but he's actually approaching it through the experience of Jesus. The Word isn't Son without Jesus, so it's through the Son. There are a couple of symbols there of the Trinity. John writes, as the lover in the beloved, each lives in the other, and the love which unites them is one with them. Hence our beautiful teaching of the Trinity. With the one and with the other, John continues, he is equal in excellence. Three persons, and there's one beloved in all three. And one love in them all makes of them one lover. And the lover is the beloved in whom each one lives. For the being which the three possess, each one possesses, and each of them loves him who bears this being. Each one is this being which alone unites them in an ineffable bond which cannot be put into words. Thus it is infinite, the love which unites them, for the three have one sole love, which is their essence, and the more love is one, so much the more is it love. In Romance 2, he moves on from that. I think it feels a bit abstract to me, kind of commentary on the prologue of John, perhaps. He goes on in Romance 2 to speak of the words of love that happen between Jesus and God. In that immense love which proceeds from the two, and that's the Spirit, the Father speaks words of great affection to the Son, words of such profound delight that no one can comprehend them. Only the Son rejoices in them, for they're meant for him. What he hears is said in this way, quotation marks, nothing contents me, my Son, apart from your company. John wants us to watch Jesus in prayer here. And God is saying to Jesus, nothing contents me, my Son, apart from your company. And when something gives me joy, I love it in you. The more something resembles you, the more it gives me satisfaction. In you only is my delight, O life of my life. Brackets, this isn't in John. You are my Son, in whom I am well pleased. The baptism experience of Jesus. You back to John, you are light of my light, you are my wisdom, the image of my substance in which I am well pleased. To the one who loves you, my son, I will give myself. That brings us into it. And the love in which I hold you, that same love I will place in them, because they've loved you, whom I love so much. Romans 3, creation as the bride for the Son. Father speaks to the Son and says, God speaks to Jesus, a bride who will love you, my Son, I seek to give you, who because of you will be found worthy to share our company and to eat bread at our table, the same bread which I eat, that your bride may know the good I have in such a son, and that she may rejoice with me in your grace and fullness. He's speaking, I understand, of the whole of the cosmos, but particularly, of course, focused on the disciples of Jesus. The Son responds to the Father. Jesus responds to God. The Word made flesh responds to God. I thank you, Father, answers the Son. To the bride whom you give me, I will reveal my splendor, so that by it she may see how great is my Father, and how it is from your being that I possess all that I've received. I will hold her, creation, the disciples, I will hold her in my arms, and she will burn with your love, and with eternal delight she will exalt your goodness. Ian Matthew, there's more to come, but Ian Matthew comments, poverty and bestowal are the coordinates of John's system, not merely because that's how things have to be for us human beings. Things are that way because that is how God is, Father, Son, and Spirit, are each absolutely poor because they each give themselves completely. So each is utterly rich with the other's generosity. And what John of the Cross is doing, what Ian Matthew's doing, what John the Evangelist does, what our whole Christian tradition does, is starting with the prayer of Jesus, we then, are taken into, beyond that experience, into the heart of God, the heart of the Trinity. But we're facing into that, but that we can't go any further there. We're just wondering about the very being of God that is must be such as to enable this communion that Jesus had with the one he called Abba. Father, continues in Matthew, wants the bride to enjoy the Son. The Son wants the bride to relish the Father. It is as if creation were the fruit of an excess of unselfishness. Sometimes people are often asking, did Jesus know he was God? What did Jesus think of himself? And maybe the quickest answer is that is, Jesus never thought of himself. All he thought of was of the Father and of us, and wanted to share that. And if you tapped him on the shoulder and said, who are you? He may well have said, not understood your question. He's the way. to something he wants us to know. So he is totally unself-centered. And the Father is totally unself-centered, because all his love is for the Son. Romance 4, creation as the bride for the Son. And I've just shown you there a painting by my favourite painter, Van Gogh. Starry, starry night, it looks a bit like, doesn't it? And on the bottom right-hand side, you've got two figures there. So be there and look at this wonder of creation. Quote, "Let it be done then, says the Father, for your love invites it. And by these words the world was created, a palace for the bride, made with great wisdom, constructed in two apartments, one above and another below. The lower was furnished with infinite variety, while the one above was made beautiful with marvellous jewels, that the bride might know the bridegroom who was hers. The upper apartment," John continues, "was placed in the upper apartment was placed the hierarchy of angels. Human nature, however, he placed in the lower apartment, for man in his being is a lesser thing. Though beings and their places were separated in this way, they all form one, who is named the bride. For love of the same bridegroom makes of them one bride. The higher beings possess the bridegroom in rejoicing. The lower beings possess him in hope. From the faith which he infuses in them, telling them that one day he will exalt them, and that from their low state he would lift them up to such a way that no one could despise it anymore. The bridegroom would make himself wholly like his human creatures, and he would come to them and dwell with them. And God would be man, and man would be God. And he would walk with them, and eat and drink with them. He himself would be with them continually until the consummation of the world, when joined, they would rejoice together in eternal song. For he was the head of this bride whom he holds, to whom all the members of the just will be joined, all who form the body of the bride. He would take her tenderly in his arms and there give her his love. And when they were thus one, he would lift her to the Father, where God's very joy would be her joy. For as the Father and the Son and he who proceeds from them live in one another, so it would be with the bride, for taken wholly into God, she will live the life of God." Romance 5. By this bright hope, which came to them from above, their wearying labours were lightened. But the drawn-out waiting and their growing desire to rejoice with their bridegroom wore on them continually. Brackets, Paul, the whole creation is yearning for something, yearning for the sons of God. By this bright hope, which came to them from above, their creation's wearying labours were lightened, but the drawn-out waiting and their growing desire to rejoice with their bridegroom wore on them continually. And so, with prayers and sighs the Psalms, and suffering, with tears and moaning, they asked night and day that now he would determine to grant them his company. Some said, if only this joy would come in my time. Others, come, Lord, send the one whom you will send. And others, oh, if only these heavens would break, and with my own eyes I could see him descending, then I would stop my crying out. Clouds, rain down from your height, earth needs you, and let the earth open which has borne us thorns. Let it bring forth that flower that would be its flowering. Others said, what gladness for the one who is living then, who will be able to see God with his own eyes, and touch him with his hand, and walk with him, and enjoy the mysteries he will then ordain. Brackets, remember Jesus' words, many prophets and kings have longed to see what you see and have never seen it, to hear what you hear and have never heard it. Romans 6 of John. The Old Testament reaches its goal in the old man, Simeon, in the temple. In these and other prayers, a long time passed. But in the latter years, their fervour greatly increased. When the aged Simeon, burning with longing, and pleaded with God that he might see this day. And so the Holy Spirit answered the good old man and gave him his word that he would not see death until he saw life descending from the heights, until he took God himself into his own hands, held him in his arms, and pressed him to himself. And Romans 7, now that the time had come when it would be good to ransom the bride, serving under the hard yoke of that law which Moses had given her, the Father, with tender love, spoke in this way. Now you see, my son, that your bride was made in your image, and so far as she is like you, she will suit you well. Yet she is different in her flesh, which your simple being does not have. In perfect love this law holds, that the lover become like the one he loves. For the greater their likeness, the greater their delight. Surely your bride's delight would greatly increase were she to see you like her in her own flesh. My will is yours, the son replied, and my glory is that your will be mine. This is fitting, Father, what you, the Most High, say, for in this way your goodness will be more seen. Your great power will be seen, and your justice and wisdom. I will go and tell the world, spreading the word of your beauty and tenderness, and of your sovereignty. I will go and seek my bride and take upon myself her weariness and labours in which she suffers so, and that she may have life, I will give my life for her, and lifting her out of that deep, I will restore her to you. The emphasis, writes Ian Matthew, is on being with, on company, but company that shares pain. The son wants to be with from the inside, from inside her weariness and troubles in which she suffers so. back to John. Then he summoned an archangel called Gabriel and sent him to a virgin called Mary. At her consent, the mystery was wrought, in whom the Trinity clothed the Word with flesh. And though three did this work, it was wrought in the one, and the Word lived incarnate in the womb of Mary. And he, who had only a father, now had a mother too. She was not like others, who conceived by man. From her own flesh, he received his flesh, and so he's called Son of God and of man. When the time had come for him to be born, writes John in this ballad, he went forth like a bridegroom from his bridal chamber, embracing his bride, holding her in his arms. He, whom the gracious mother laid in a manger, among some animals that were there at the time, men sang songs and angels melodies, celebrating the marriage of two such as these. But God, there in the manger, moaned and wept tears, tears that were the jewels brought by the bride to the wedding. The mother gazed in sheer wonder on such an exchange. In God, man's weeping, and in man, joy. Things usually so alien one to the other.
Incarnate in a tiny child, so humbly you need my love. Help me hold and adore you here. I long just to love you, God. I lift my hands to touch your face, O God. I give my life to love you evermore. I long just to love you, O God. My Jesus. Suffering servant living now, disguised in the wounded soul. Help me serve and adore you here. I long just to love you, God. I lift my hands to touch your face, O God. I give my life to love you evermore. To love you, O God, to serve and adore you, O God. I long just to love you, O God, my Jesus. Dwell in my inmost soul. Help me kneel and adore you here. I long just to love you, God. I lift my hands to touch your face, O God. My life to love you evermore. serve and adore you, O God. I long just to love you, O God, my Jesus. My Jesus.
So Ian Matthew writes, that is who Jesus is for John of the Cross. As he begins the months of isolation, and he began in the December, so it was Advent, and the months of isolation and bitter disapproval, when everything, his body, his friends, his sense of purpose, even the God of his fathers, turns stranger. In faith, Jesus is the one whom John encounters at his side, weeping his tears, feeling his anguish, sweetening what is immeasurably bitter by his spousal love. Ian Matthew goes on, where is Jesus in John's doctrine of God's self-gift, todo, and where is Jesus in the doctrine of making room, making space, nada? First, God's gift, the todo, the all, which gives nada any meaning. When John says, not this, nor that, nor that, but faith, it can bring a marvelous sense of spaciousness and freedom, but it can also bring a feeling of rootlessness. It's all very well, he's telling us to let go of secondary supports, but we have to hold on, writes Ian Matthew, we have to hold on to something. So John teaches me, and you, hold on to faith. Hold on to Jesus. He is God's todo to us. He is the gift for whom space must urgently be made. John writes in his commentary of the Ascent, God has become silent and has no more to say. What God used to say partially to the prophets, God has now said totally in God's Son, giving us his Son who is our everything. And John also writes, you will not take from me, my God, what you once gave me in your only Son, Jesus Christ, in whom you gave me all I long for. So I will rejoice. You will not delay if I do not fail to hope. Set your eyes, writes John, on him alone, because in him, God says, I have said everything to you. Love, writes Ian Matthew, love takes us on a journey deeper into Christ. Deeper, but always into him. And so, writes John in his spiritual canticle, and so up to the caverns set deep into the rock, almost out of sight, we'll find a way to enter, there to taste the pomegranate wine. The caverns, writes Ian, the living space, are the mysteries of Jesus, Entering means taking on the shape of Jesus' life so as to meet Jesus' heart. The soul, writes John, longs really to enter these caverns, Christ's caverns, so that she might indeed be absorbed, transformed, drunk with the love their wisdom contains, hiding herself in the heart of her beloved. Hiding herself in the heart of her beloved. For John, writes Ian, Christ is the receding depth which makes the divine always new and increasingly amazing. Jesus is the only place from which one can gaze on the Father unrestrictedly. And then he quotes John of the Cross, thanking the Father and loving him anew with the great delight and feeling through his Son, Jesus Christ. And this the soul does, united with Christ and together with Christ. Heaven will be that, writes Ian Matthew. It will be a total entry into the caverns of Christ's heart. Infinite space for the Father. As it becomes clear, writes Ian Matthew, that John's program can lead not just to upright behaviour, but to inner poverty and total emptiness, it's hardly surprising that we may feel misgivings. And that is where John's hinge, which is chapter 2 of the Ascent 7, aims to meet us. Book 2, chapter 7 of the Ascent. And this is some of the teaching there. One, it's a narrow gate. We are to deny self, we're to take a cross, and we're to follow Jesus. The self we deny, of course, is not our real self. It's the presenting self, the ego. So that needs denying so that the real self can meet its lover. So it's a narrow gate. Two, Jesus experienced the night of the senses and the night of the spirit. So we're not alone. You can go there, writes Ian Matthew, because Christ has been there. That is John's logic. So, Todor, what is it for John of the Cross? Heaven will be that, writes Ian Matthew, a total entry into the caverns of Christ's heart, an infinite space for the Father. And nada? It's not enough for Jesus to have said night. It's important in John's view that he should have experienced it, since he is our example and our light. On the cross, the heart of Jesus became a massive space for the fire of the Spirit to burn, free to blaze out, more intense than all the fires in the world, in the resurrection. And the resurrection is the blazing out of the fire of love. Night, this is all Ian Matthew now, night means to tell us not so much what's actually happening in the night of the spirit, but night tells us how it feels. the nada we're feeling is Jesus' emptiness. And that changes everything to know that. It's Jesus' emptiness. The darkness that can eat into human life with its threat of isolation and appearance of chaos has taken on Christ's contours. It's become a space for the Father to fill. John's vision commits believers to allow Jesus to work out his dying and his rising in their lives. Didn't Paul write from his amazing being able to say, I live no longer I, but Christ lives in me. He also writes to the Colossians, I have still to fill out what is wanting in my flesh of the sufferings of Christ. There's nothing wanting in the sufferings of Christ, but there's still a journey to go for Paul, for the dying and the rising of Christ in his life. And here I conclude. In his faith, his hope, and his love, it is Jesus' faith, Jesus' hope, and Jesus' love that are given me by the Spirit of God. And we saw yesterday that it's faith and hope and love that is what the experience of God is. It's the flame of his love that embraces me. It's the spring of life welling up in his heart, Jesus' heart, that wells up in mine. I will give you a spring of living water welling up. Jesus' heart is totally open to God, and Jesus gives me, each of us, his heart.